ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Rip Ezelston, a former firefighter and triathlete. He's an American health activist and food writer, and the author of The Engine 2 Diet and My Beef with Meat. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
According to Wildlife Extra, a report on tiger farming across Asia has revealed that more than 5,000 tigers in China are living in unnatural cramped condition in rows of cages. These sites range in size from a handful of tigers to two establishments that have more than 1,000 tigers in each and are often open to the public with tigers displayed as entertainment shows. Despite a 1975 ban on international tiger trade, seizures of tigers and tiger products across the Asian region prove that there is a growing market for the products. These farms are therefore a ready source for such products. Conservationists are concerned captive-bred tigers are not only feeding demand for tiger products across Asia, but are also stimulating it, placing an additional and unsustainable pressure on their wild counterparts. The report entitled Caged Assets, Tiger Farming and Trade was carried out by a number of conservation charities, including the Born Free Foundation. Their CEO, Will Travers, said, "The tiger farming industry has absolutely no value for conservation. These tigers are often in a pitiful state, both in terms of their genetics and their welfare." He concludes that these tiger farms are commercial concerns and their owners are banking on extinction. Illegal trade in tiger parts and products, poaching, conflict between tigers and communities living alongside them, and habitat loss and degradation have caused wild tiger populations to plummet to as low as 3,000 individuals. This report calls on all countries with tiger breeding facilities to urgently phase out tiger farms, destroy stockpile tiger parts, and implement measures which address the use of captive-bred tigers in trade.
A report by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization links 70% of human diseases to animal agriculture. The report, entitled World Agriculture: Changing Disease Landscapes, explains how population growth, agricultural expansion, and the rise of globe-spanning food supply chains have dramatically altered how diseases emerge, how they jump species boundaries, and spread. The report says 70% of the new diseases that have emerged in humans over recent decades are of animal origin and are directly related to the human quest for more animal-sourced food. It goes on to explain how developing countries face a staggering burden of human and livestock diseases, creating a major threat to food safety. Recurrent epidemics in livestock affect food security, livelihoods, and national and local economies in poor and rich countries alike. In the push to produce more food, humans have carved out vast areas of agricultural land in previously wild areas, putting themselves and their animals into contact with wildlife-borne diseases. Globalization and climate change are redistributing pathogens, presenting a greatly increased risk of global pandemics. The Food and Agriculture Organization advocates an approach which links the interplay between environmental factors, animal health, and human health, adding that livestock health is the weakest link in our global health chain. Meanwhile, farmed animals in the U.S. consume about 80% of the antibiotics used in our country. Such frequent use has caused antibiotic-resistant superbugs to be on the rise, with more than 2 million people in the U.S. contracting drug-resistant infections annually. From a vegan perspective, all of these problems can be avoided if we were to consign animal agriculture to history.
The Animal Legal Defense Fund, along with co-plaintiffs Project Coyote and an individual Oregon resident, settled a lawsuit against Dwayne Ferlino, organizer of the annual JMK Coyote Hunting Contest in Harney County, Oregon. Ferlino's killing contest, held annually for 8 seasons, required hunters to buy into the contest by paying an entry fee of $100. Top teams won cash prizes totaling more than $10,000 for various kills, including most kills and largest killed. According to the ALDF's lawsuit, which was filed with Project Coyote this past January, the killing contest and associated betting competition constituted a gambling enterprise, which is illegal and deemed a public nuisance in the state of Oregon. Under state law, a court may stop illegal gambling events. In response to the lawsuit, Ferlino had filed a counterclaim for $100,000. Arguing the countersuit was an attempt at intimidation, the groups filed a motion to dismiss the countersuit, leading Ferlino to drop his meritless claim and settle the lawsuit against him by agreeing never to host another hunting contest in Oregon and to pay more than $5,000 in attorney fees to the animal groups. Previous JMK events result in the killing of nearly 150 coyotes. You can learn more about this great victory for coyotes at ALDF.org.
Stay with us. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Rip Esselstyn, former firefighter and triathlete and author of The Engine to Diet and My Beef with Meat. That's next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on ACT Radio is Rip Esselstyn. Thanks for being with us, Rip.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Rip, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got into vegan nutrition?
Absolutely. Well, it goes back about 27 years. In 1987 is when I graduated from the University of Texas at Austin, where I had been there on a swimming scholarship, and I was eating on the athletic training table with the football players and the basketball players and the baseball players. And
so you had to get plenty of protein from steaks.
we got steak and bacon and eggs and cheese. I mean, it was endless, right? But that all came to a screeching halt for me when I graduated, and I decided to stay in Austin, Texas. I decided to, instead of pursuing a normal career path, I decided that I would dive into being a full-time triathlete. I had the swimming background, and I'd always loved to bike and run, so I kind of married the three together, and I started what would become an 11-year career as a full-time triathlete. But interestingly, about 3 years before I graduated, my father started his research at the Cleveland Clinic to show that you could not only halt, but you could also reverse heart disease by adopting a whole food plant-based diet. And so I had seen what my father had done since 1984, and so when I had the opportunity to start cooking for myself, preparing my own meals, buying my own groceries, I jumped in full kale, and I've been eating this way now for 27 years. And then I also discovered, when I decided that I would become a full-time triathlete, that Dave Scott, who at the time was the number one triathlete in the world, 6-time Hawaii Ironman champion, that this guy was a plant-based stud machine, and that's how he fueled himself to give him the leg up on the competition. And so I was like, wow, if it's good enough for Dave, it's good enough for me. And, you know, if I want to protect myself from ever getting heart disease and a lot of the other diseases that are just manifestations of us eating this diet of nutritional excessiveness, then let me do it. And you know, something about being an athlete, I didn't feel like I was bulletproof, and I knew that, you know, hard work, if you wanted to get somewhere, it was hard work, it was discipline, and I kind of felt like there were no gifts in life. And I think a lot of people, because I started this when I was 24 years old, and I think a lot of people are under the false impression that they're bulletproof, that mm-hmm. heart disease, that diabetes, that, you know, type 2 diabetes, the major cancers, they're going to be able to avoid them. And, you know, the reality is something entirely different.
You mentioned your father. I think we should say his name. Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn was one of the pioneers in promoting a whole foods diet.
Oh, yeah. No, he in 1984 started studying cultures around the globe that didn't have or had very minimal amounts of breast cancer. And what he discovered is that, you know, whether it was Central Africa, whether it was the Papua Highlanders in New Guinea, whether it was rural Japan, rural China, where they had a fraction of the breast cancer that we had, that they basically were eating a whole food plant-based diet. And that was his specialty, was the breast and breast cancer and the thyroid and parathyroid. And then he kind of extrapolated from that, you know, if it's good for cancer, breast cancer, it's probably good for heart, for, you know, your heart as well. And then that kind of ironically is where he ended up doing all of his research to show that you could reverse heart disease by doing this.
Well, and so when you were in college, you were just sort of ignoring your dad?
Not in the least. Not in the least. But that's a very good question. But no, here's the thing. Remember, so here I am, right? I'm a scholarship athlete, right, and I'm living in the dormitory, and I'm eating at the athletic, basically the athletic hall, right?
And you're in Texas.
And I'm in Texas. And so, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to, like, I don't have a car, so I'm not going to go off campus and then, you know, spend my own money. I didn't have a kitchen. I didn't have a stove. I didn't have a refrigerator. So you just kind of, that's one of the things that I've learned, is that for people that are in college, there are some limitations, right? And so I don't harshly kind of make judgments on people. Also that, you know, if you're in high school and you're, like, I gave a presentation at a school. It was a high school in Mercersburg, Pennsylvania, public school, to about 600 ninth through 12th graders, and it was right next to the biggest dairy farm in Pennsylvania. And afterwards, I mean, you know, I basically bashed dairy, and I had all these kids whose parents were dairy farmers. They came up to me and basically were like, you know, well, what are we supposed to do? I mean, you know, we live with it at home. We can't, you know, really go out. And I said, you know, I get where you're coming from, and I understand it. But just maybe have this presentation be something that can plant the seed, so that when you are on your own, you know, you have your, when you're going to school or you have your own apartment or your own home, and, you know, that you can start to, you know, start to avoid the dairy products. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you had a lot of parents mad at you there.
Well, there weren't too many parents in the audience.
So if they were, you didn't know it.
You're right. But it was crazy. I mean, there were 600 kids. And when I the first question I asked them, so how many of you are concerned about your health? And literally three people out of 600 raised their hand.
Yeah, because they're like in fifth grade, right?
No, these are 9th through 12th graders.
Oh, 9th through 10th.
9th through 12th graders.
Yeah.
9th through 12th. And then I asked them, okay, well, so let me see then, how many of you are smokers? And 75% of the audience raised their hand. And I said, well, yeah, okay, that does speak volumes. I said, how many of you are athletes? And about half of them raised their hands. And then what I ended up doing at the very, very end of my presentation, because I wanted to really connect with these guys and these gals, is I said, okay, I want whoever thinks that they are bad asses, I want you to come up here and we're going to have a competition. And so I had eight guys. They came up, and then I asked them one by one, are you a smoker or an athlete? And the first guy said both. Next guy said both. Next guy said both. Next guy said athlete. Next guy said just a smoker, right? And it kind of went like that. And then I said, okay, guys, this is what we're doing. We're having a push-up competition, and we're going to see who lasts the longest, right? And so we started, and the audience started cheering with us, you know, one, two, three, and then they died off one by one, and it was the old man that was playing strong that was left standing. Yeah.
Were they all writhing on the floor with side aches and stuff, complaining?
Of course. And they said, Uncle, we will go plan strong. Yes, we will.
Well, you know, I think that's definitely an inspiring thing for many people to become vegan is the prospect of great health. And from an athletic standpoint as well. And I know we've had people at various events here in El Paso and otherwise who are drawn to the events for that sole purpose. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your life as a triathlete.
Man, well, when I was a full-time triathlete, I was competing probably 20 to 30 times a year. My specialty was the international distance, which was a mile swim, a 25-mile bike, and then a 10K run, although I also did a couple Ironman triathlons, which is a completely different beast. But the triathlon, it's swimming, and then it's biking, and then it's running, and you do each sport one after the other, and you try and have as quick a transition as you can from one sport to the next. And it became an Olympic sport in 2000. It's probably one of the fastest growing sports in the country. I can't even believe how many people have jumped in and are doing triathlons now because they want to be able to say they've done a triathlon. But it's a really, one of the things I love so much about triathlons is you don't typically suffer from the same type of burnout and the slew of injuries that you get if you were just a runner, because, you know, runners just typically always have something that's going wrong with them. But with triathlons, you get to swim, which is, you know, where you're in a wonderful medium, which is water, which is very friendly. The biking, there's no pounding that goes on. And then running, you can basically get by doing, you know, 25 miles of running a week, which just about anybody's body should be able to withstand if you have good form.
All right. Okay. Well, let's see. It might be a challenge for some of us here in the studio.
Yeah. When I think of triathlon, I think cigarettes, cigars, and pipes.
Great. That's terrible. But like, seriously, about, you know, people are always concerned that they're not going to get enough energy or they won't have enough nutrition to compete at that level. So were you having to eat, like, loads of spaghetti or – you can tell our listeners how you can do it without, like, you know, gorging on 15 packs of peanuts or something before.
Cans of tuna.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a matter of what I tell people, especially triathletes that are training several hours a day, is you need to let your weight be your guide as to how much you need to eat, because typically when you transition from the standard American diet to a whole food plant-based diet, you need to eat 30% more volume of food in order to get the same amount of calories, because plant-based foods are generally so calorie dilute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great if for people that are kind of more sedentary and are trying to lose weight and get healthy, but as an athlete, it presents a little different set of kind of requirements. Now, just know you're going to get everything you need as far as carbohydrates and essential fats and all the protein you need, the phytonutrients, the antioxidants that will help with all the free radicals that you're producing when you train. You know, the oxidative stress that you have as an athlete is immense. And so a whole food plant-based diet is the best diet to reduce the oxidation, to reduce the inflammation from the training. But the one thing I hammer home is you got to make sure you're eating enough food. And if you're losing too much weight too quickly and you're feeling weak and fatigued, it's not the plant-based diet that's doing it. It's the fact that you're not consuming enough calories. So, again, you know, if your ideal weight is 175 and you all of a sudden you're down to 168, you need to start eating more. And so I typically have a big, big bowl of, you know, I have a Rip's Big Bowl cereal that's available at Whole Foods Market, right? But I typically have a big bowl of that with banana and frozen mango chunks and frozen blueberries and then some almond milk. And then lunch sometimes will be 6 open-faced kale, hummus, cilantro, avocado sandwiches.
Ooh, that sounds good. Yeah.
But remember, they're all open faced, right?
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
I'm not having the bread on both sides. And then dinner, you know, is typically I'll just, you know, 2 or 3 sweet potatoes, soup, some sort of a steamed green leafy vegetable with a walnut sauce. And then for dessert, I'll have a mango or an apple or a banana. And during the day, when I'm training hard, I will sometimes eat 5 to 8 pieces of fruit. I will have healthy crackers, stuff like that.
You know, you mentioned oxidation and athletes, and it makes me think, if you're an athlete and you are producing a lot more free radicals because of the exercise, if you're not eating a good diet, it seems like you're at a greater risk for disease and early death.
Oh, it's a double whammy. Yeah, it's a double whammy. Yeah, not only are you, you know, basically are you taxing your body, but you're also taxing your body physically when you train, and then you're also taxing it with all the garbage, you know, empty calorie, nutrient, you know, kind of deficient food as well. So it's just it's a double whammy. And I think what I'm seeing is that more and more athletes are coming around to eating more of a whole food, plant-based, healthy, vegan diet. And I want to make it clear that in my circles, we make it very clear that you can be a vegan, and it doesn't mean you're eating healthfully.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can attest to that. I didn't hear you say one thing about vegan cupcakes or veganaise or some of these other really high-calorie products that are readily available to vegans now.
I know. There's so many of the you know, like the meat analogs and you know the different burgers and the different roasts and stuff. But they're generally loaded with soy protein isolates and concentrates and sodium and a lot of nonsense.
Yeah,
and so I tell people you know they're good transitional foods if you're making the transition from the standard American diet, but the more and more that your palate becomes more sophisticated and discerning, the more even those foods you can just tell very very quickly that they're jacked up with all kinds of stuff.
Right, all kinds of preservatives and
yeah.
You know, yesterday I made my first almond cheese, and it's a lot cheaper than buying a vegan cheese at the supermarket, and probably more nutritious because I know what's in it.
Yeah, well, good for you. I mean, I tell people that, you know, you want to stay away from the diet cheese because the second ingredient's canola oil and it's 70% fat, and I find it I don't mean to rag too much on diet, but it's just I find it to be really just abysmal. And then most of the other vegetarian and vegan cheeses are either they're loaded with way too much fat, or they have casein in them, which is actually the protein that comes from dairy products, milk,
One of the leading causes of cancer.
Well, exactly. Yeah, according to Colin Campbell and his research for over 30 years at Cornell, casein is really considered the number one tumor and cancer promoter and accelerant.
Now, Rip, you left a community as a triathlete, and the folks there, I'm sure, weren't as keen at a plant-based diet back then, especially. And then you went into probably even tougher audience and took on a profession as a firefighter. How was it like there, bringing a plant-based diet?
It was nothing short of brutal. I was a Buddhist walking into a Catholic church. I mean, it was ugly, and I got ridiculed and made fun of more than any human being deserves. But you know what? I stuck to my guns. I had a thick skin, and when it comes to your health, nobody is going to take care of you like you are. And so that was in 1997 when I joined the Austin Fire Department. And then in 2003 is when we had this epiphany that one of our own was basically a dead man walking. And we rallied the troops at Fire Station 2. And lo and behold, you know, all these guys started eating a whole food plant-based diet. And we started a healthy eating revolution at Fire Station 2 in Austin, Texas. And now you have pockets of all 44 fire stations in Austin that are that are eating this way, or at least are supportive of it for those that are eating this way. And we have the in-house fire department physician that is supportive of Engine 2. He's doing it himself, and he tells every firefighter that comes through his office after their annual physical that's either hypertensive, has high cholesterol, is overweight, pre-diabetic, or has type 2 diabetes, he tells them to grab a copy of Engine 2 and do the Engine 2 diet. So it's really cool what's happened in Austin, Texas.
Well, that story garnered national attention when the Engine 2 department went vegan. pretty amazing. And your book has done so well, too.
Yeah, well, Engine 2, you know, I was very fortunate in that it became a national bestseller, New York Times national bestseller. And then the same with my second book, My Beef with Meat, which came out just a little over a year ago. It became a number one New York Times bestseller. And I'm working on a third book right now that hopefully will be out in about a year and a half. But I'm not gonna tell you what it's about.
It has nothing to do with diet, right?
Oh, it has everything to do with diet.
Good.
Yes. You know, one of the things I'd love to do before we have to go is I'd love to give a plug for an event that we're having in September here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, that'd be great.
What's that?
It's called Food and Health 2014. It's Conversations on Diet and Health in America. We're bringing in some of the biggest and brightest thought leaders in this space in the world. We have John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods Market, who's going to be one of our keynote speakers. We have James McWilliams, yeah, who wrote Just Food and is an amazing, amazing guy. But it's broken up into four segments. So we're having four conversations. The first is on food policy in America. And we're bringing in Mark Bittman, you know, the New York Times food writer. Marlene Schwartz, who's the director of Yale University's Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. And then Neil Barnard, one of my heroes, who's the president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And those three will each be doing a talk that's followed by a moderated panel discussion and then Q&A from the audience. Then we're having our next conversation will be on the environmental impact of our diet, and we're bringing in three amazing experts for that. And then the next day, we're having a conversation on healthcare in the 21st century and what that can look like if we start embracing a more plant-based diet. And we have Howard Jacobson, who's the co-author of Whole, which is Colin Campbell's second book. We have my father and a guy named Phil Tuso, who's the clinical director for Kaiser Permanente. And then our last session is going to be, how do you make behavioral change? And we're bringing in three different psychologists, including Doug Lyle, the author of The Pleasure Trap. So thank you for letting me just give a little. And that's going to be September 12th, 13th, and 14th at the AT&T Conference Center on the University of Texas campus.
Wow.
That's great.
We all want to go.
Yeah. and Rip, where can our listeners go to learn more about the Engine 2 diet and My Beef with Meat and all the other great projects you're
working on? Thank you. The best thing would be engine2.com.
Okay, great.
And that's the number 2, not, you know, you don't spell it out. Yeah, Engine 2.
We've been talking with Rip Ezelston, a former firefighter and triathlete. Thanks for being with us, Rip.
Hey, my pleasure, you guys.
Thanks. Keep Austin green. If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.